Welcome to PostStatus Draft, the official podcast for PostStatus, a website with news and information for WordPress professionals. Today, Joe and I discuss WordPress as a headless CMS. We talk about what a headless CMS is, WordPress's strengths and weaknesses as a headless CMS, popular frameworks to utilize, and offer up some examples. If you enjoy this podcast, you can get a lot more quality news and analysis from the PostStatus Club multiple times per week. Check out our current club members, site partners, and join the club on our website at poststatus.com/club. You'll be joining more than 650 wonderful club members, and you'll never miss important WordPress news again. Today, I'd like to feature one of our partners, Opt-in Monster. Opt-in Monster allows you to convert visitors into subscribers. You can easily create and A/B test beautiful lead capture forms without a developer. They recently released Opt-in Monster 3.0 with an all-new builder interface and other great features. For more information on Opt-in Monster, go to optinmonster.com, and thank you to Opt-in Monster for being a PostStatus partner. Now, here's our show. Hey, everybody. I'm Brian, and I'm the editor of PostStatus.
And I'm Joe, a co-founder and the CTO of HumanMade. And welcome to the PostStatus Draft Podcast. And today we're talking about WordPress as a headless CMS.
That's right. So this will be a relatively technical episode. But before we get to that, remember we made a promise? You don't remember?
What if I didn't remember? Oh, is it? No. Oh, yeah. No, wait a minute. I remember you said that we would read out somebody's name if they wrote a review. Is that it?
That is correct.
Did we get any?
We did.
Please don't tell me it was Ryan.
Well, I will not ruin it yet, but we got 12 ratings.
No way.
12.
What's?
Because of our request, which is awesome. Not all of them.
Positive.
No. They're all 5 stars. People were very, very nice about that.
That is very nice.
But five of them
that didn't like it weren't around long enough to hear us ask for a.
Yeah, so four people left a review. So, like, you can rate or review.
Okay, I see.
And I said we would share it, but unfortunately, I don't know people's name if all they did was rate because it doesn't give us that information.
I see.
But I can share. The wonderful people who reviewed our podcast, for the record, this is the first time we ever asked for this, so we had, like, no ratings at all. So I'm thankful that people rated the podcast, and this is a larger bulk than we'll have normally, I'm sure. But yeah.
We've had a rating increase of 1,200%, is what you're saying.
That's right. Or maybe infinity since we
actually,
had
that's true. No, I think we had one previously.
We had one, so 1,200%, yeah. So I want to thank the people that rated the podcast. David Laeta, he said that the conversations on PostStatus Draft are often more heavily focused on developers, which is not surprising given our histories. That said, he said we speak in a friendly tone toward all listeners without ever dumbing down. So thank you, David. Corey Scoggin called us a pair of witty and professional WordPress writers.
Wow, so, making me blush.
Someone named KK from KS, so KK from Kansas, I guess, said that coupled with the PostStatus email subscription, props for mentioning the PostStatus Club.
Oh, wow.
Thank you. Extra bonus points.
Right there. Yeah.
they said this has become their primary way of staying up to date with all things WordPress. And it plays well at 1.5x speed, which we agree.
hint.
Yeah, Joe and I don't listen to ourselves at standard time. We find ourselves unbearable in that scenario.
Truly.
So if you use an app that allows you to speed us up, we're much more enjoyable faster. And then Rat Pat said, "Fantastic podcast. I appreciate the breadth of knowledge and conversational way they talk about news and development within WordPress. The length is great. Fantastic for listening while I work."
So, well, there we go. So at least somebody enjoys the lengthy episodes.
Yeah, right.
Hold on to that one as an excuse. Yeah, every time
next
we
time,
go way over.
Next time we go an hour plus.
Right.
Which is every episode almost.
It's true.
So thank you to all of you for reviewing the podcast. We very much appreciate that.
Checks are in the mail.
Checks. Don't promise too much. All right. So if other people want to rate it, you can rate it in iTunes and other applications, and we'd certainly appreciate it. Now, let's get into a headless CMS with WordPress. What the heck is a headless CMS?
Or what the heck did Ryan mean when he said, let's talk about the headless CMS, probably Theo. Yeah. So to me, it is, a headless CMS, I guess, is a content management system that isn't responsible for displaying the end user website. Is maybe that's broad enough to define it as. So I guess like in WordPress speak, that would be, you have WordPress running, you know, you're using the admin, but you're probably not using the theming layer to build the website. Or maybe it's not even something that has a front end as a website. So maybe it's just feeding RSS feeds to something else or something like that. Does that sound good?
Yeah, Chris Coyer actually has a nice post on this that does what Chris Coyer does best, where he really simplifies it. And he defined a regular CMS as a way to store the data, number one, a CRUD UI, so create, read, update, delete, and ways to display the data is number three. And for a headless CMS, he chops off number three, so headless, and so it doesn't include ways to display the data. Instead, it provides an API to the data.
That makes sense.
So at the core, that's what it is. And for something like WordPress, it obviously is very opinionated in how it anticipates you're going to display the data. So that includes like the WordPress templating system, the URL structure that it anticipates, the
right
functions available to you once you get to the templating area. It's very opinionated on all of that. Additionally, something that I've thought more about recently and had historically not really considered is even in the admin, there's all of these links and stuff that link to the front end.
I was just going to mention that.
Yeah, and it assumes, like, go view this post. And it's like, well, how do you know where the post is?
It's true. Those are assumptions, and obviously, like, yeah, before you even get to specifically implementing specific theme features, WordPress already has an assumption that you're probably going to render the front end of the website, from the same, even the most basic ones from the same domain that you're in the admin. So there is a certain amount, I think, of basal assumptions that it's going to need to make. And for WordPress, like, I'm kind of okay with it, presuming that you're going to have WordPress on the front end as well. But maybe like there's definitely plenty of cases where it could do a much better job, I think, of allowing you to, define either a different domain that your front end is on or a different, structure or something like that. Whereas right now, you're kind of having to wrangle it to do those kind of hacky things, I think.
Mm-hmm. So considering WordPress requires some wrangling and hacky things, as you've mentioned, does that mean that is it a good option for a headless CMS?
I'd still say so. Like I've always said that I think one of the main strength of WordPress is the WordPress admin. I think that's why people generally enjoy it. I think that's the reason why it's become so popular is because people find it very easy to use the admin interface, and also looks relatively nice. If you compare it to the previous generation of CMSs, WordPress was always kind of much better than those. So I see like the admins being really core part of that, the headless CMS approach. And as WordPress admin is so good, then yeah, I think that's a great starting point for that. But it's not like WordPress isn't a decoupled framework in a sense. You can't just kind of pull the modules you want and expect it to work without this front end portion. Like there is a certain expectation to a large degree that you embed a link in line in your HTML, and the link is hard coded to the post that you've linked to. So if you've got a different, if you're displaying that content under a different rewrite system or something, then you get those hard coded links. Same for images, you have the same problem. So it definitely has its shortcomings, but all in all, I'd still call it, it's got to be one of the strongest options out there still.
Which is funny because This, I think this is probably mostly a critique within WordPress land, but it's easy for those of us who have years of experience dealing with the admin and its eccentricities. It can be frustrating sometimes. So saying like it's so good is odd sometimes, you know, but it becomes so good when you compare it to some of the other options out there, I think.
Like there's definitely room for improvement within WordPress itself and for things that it can improve. But once you are going to, you know, if you're going to go to the point of, okay, well, let's look at everything else, then, you know, I'm obviously in a better position to judge WordPress than anything else, but I think it would definitely have to be a top contender.
Yeah, definitely. Especially in terms of how well tested it is and how, you know, just how much has been done over the years to make it accessible for everyone. And, you know, from even when you consider like allowing it in many languages and it to be accessible.
It's such a mature project now that there's a lot that goes with that that is easy to kind of overlook initially. But then, yeah, you're going to find down the line that all of these things that WordPress has solved, which you get to benefit from by just using in a headless way still, all of the internationalization stuff, yeah, all the accessibility stuff, you know, just the fact that it's a very well looked after project, really, is all going to play into that.
So in terms of how the headless CMS operates, typically that's going to be based off of a REST API, and WordPress is now more out of the box useful as a headless CMS because of the infrastructure of the REST API that went in 4.4. And even without the endpoints, which are still in the plugin, that gives a basis that people can build custom endpoints for their project, and they can utilize WordPress as a headless CMS based on those endpoints and be good to go without a whole lot of extra shenanigans, right?
Right, yeah. Like, at least with the infrastructure, and it gives you kind of a place to put your stuff in terms of, like, where do I put the code to do all this headless stuff? Because, you know, we have the pattern for doing a theme, which is where you do the front end of your site. And those paradigms are really well established. But at least having the REST API infrastructure there gives you the same paradigm to follow. But if you want to, you know, provide the data in a machine readable format to do the front end in some other software. I'm not sure, you know, I kind of think for really kind of bespoke headless stuff, having the plugin with all the endpoints probably isn't going to be much use to you anyway, because you're doing very bespoke things. If on the other hand, you're doing, you know, just a front end theme in a different language or something like that isn't a WordPress theme, then I guess, you know, those endpoints will still be pretty useful to you.
Or if you're using WordPress's default data types in addition to your custom stuff, then, I mean, even a complex bespoke application, it might still have a blog, you know,
that's true.
Or regular pages, or, you know, require a taxonomy system, in which case the endpoints from the plugin would be useful and give you a nice head start on working with your data. when we talk about where that data goes, because we're eliminating the view layer, the data doesn't just go potentially to a front end of a website. It could literally go to any application device, like a mobile app, or wherever, right?
Yeah, a feed reader or what? Yeah.
One of the examples that I saw at WooConf, Bryce. Oh gosh, I can't remember his last name right now, but anyway, we're calling him Bryce. He gave examples of using a e-commerce REST API to do things like light up a little display on his desk when he got an order.
yeah, that counts.
So that counts as the type of interface you could be dealing with. You know, you could be making a disco ball go off in a warehouse. So I think that's kind of one literally of the, be anything.
The beauties of designing something in a kind of API driven way is you don't decide how the data looks based off of how something else is going to display that data, which is what you do with themes, right? Whereas once you kind of, you know, have an API for your product or website once, and something else is running that website, you know, you don't need to change anything when somebody wants to build something like you were just mentioning to do something else with that data or show it in a different way, make a mobile app or whatever. That's kind of the biggest difference I see, is it allows you to broadcast all of your data, irregardless of the context it's going to be shown in effectively. And then it's just the responsibility of the different applications that are displaying that data to the user for them to make the decisions of the context of how they want to display it. So it kind of makes it a little easier, I think, because of that.
Yeah. And with WordPress, it doesn't necessarily have to be the very center of the overall application. Y'all have HumanMade has a white paper about talking to 25% of the web via the REST API. And in it, there's a headless section. And you actually have this graph that where WordPress sits between, say, a print CMS on one side and on the other side, an app backend and a website backend, and then those deliver it out to a variety of formats too, like Apple News, RSS feeds, the website itself, and then Android and iOS apps and whatever else. So WordPress doesn't have to be the very core of something. Like, you could have a setup where you're authoring articles in Google Drive within a specific folder or something, and then you push from there into WordPress, and then WordPress is kind of the basis from that point to deliver it to, you know, the website and the apps. Yeah. So there's it creates a lot of flexibility in terms of what you can do. So you really have to be more creative, I guess, in terms of the way you structure your project as a whole, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's true that, like, you don't need to use WordPress in a, you know, you don't need to author the content there. Like, this example, I think, that was used in the white paper is the actual content is authored elsewhere, and, you know, at where it is for print in a news organization, for instance. So, yeah, you can go into WordPress. You can still, I guess, like, use the editorial side of WordPress to make later tweaks, which is going to change the content for where it's broadcast from that point on. Or not at all. Like, it could just go in and be used as just a syndication platform to push it elsewhere. So I think, like, once as WordPress developers, once we get really proficient with all of the custom post types and taxonomies, which I think most people are at this point, it's really quite easy to ingest data and also export it via APIs or RSS feeds or whatever else. So it's really quite versatile in that sense, in that you can kind of place it anywhere as a bridge, between two different systems. And it can just be used in that quite lightweight fashion.
Mm-hmm. If someone's considering doing a headless CMS implementation with WordPress, I imagine there are a few areas where WordPress does things that we take for granted, and you have to figure out a new solution for it. The only one that comes to my mind personally is routing.
Yeah.
But can you talk about dealing with stuff like that, and what someone should make sure they're taking into account? Because it's not as easy as just saying, oh, yeah, we're just going to use React for the front end and boom.
Yeah, no, it's not. So routing, as I would say, or routing, as you would say.
The English translation. Proper English.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is a very difficult problem. This is something that I do hope to... I have been kind of thinking on for a while for a way to solve. But the essential problem is if you have your application, let's just say it's a JavaScript, React, or Angular app, and somebody goes to the URL, poststatus.com/2015/ automatic, right? So let's say that's going to be so first of all, from that URL, you don't know what you should be looking up
in the REST API based off of that URL. So that's really what the routing is all about, right? It's taking your human readable URL and saying, how do I convert that to in WP, in internal is in WP rewrite. What you're doing is converting that URL to some WP query args. But what you're doing when you're routing at the API level is you're taking that URL and you need to somehow map that into how do I automatically in some way get the data from the REST API, for example, for that URL. So this is kind of a tricky problem because it's now the responsibility of the front-end app to choose how does it want to do all the parsing of the URL and transform that into like working out what it should be getting from the API. Because typically this is all done in WordPress. When you're building a WordPress site, you have functions like add rewrite rule, and that's all kind of done internally. When you create a new post type, you can say what the rewrite slug is, and this all kind of happens for you automatically. Whereas if you decide to replace the front end of your site, now you kind of don't get any help at all with knowing what the URLs, the structure should be, and also being able to automatically pass those URLs into collecting the correct information from the REST API. So as to how to solve this, there's a couple of ways that would be best done in. One is you could try and keep the routing managed by WordPress. So in WordPress, which probably makes the most sense, I think, because WordPress kind of needs to be aware of the rewrite structure that you're using, so it can write its internal permalinks to different posts when you insert links to posts and things like that. So having the rewrite as part of part of what WordPress knows about makes sense. The problem is, how do you then take WordPress's knowledge of rewrites and pass that to the front end, so the front end can use that information to apply it to the URL and then work out what you get from the API, if you're still following along. So one way that I think that would be kind of cool to do that would be kind of twofold. So first of all, you would write a transformer essentially from, let's say I could give a function a list of WP query args, and it would just return to me a REST API URL for essentially the same data that would be fetched from WP query. So if I were to pass in, an obscure WP query var. If I put in like name equals Brian or something for a post called Brian, then it would actually give me a REST URL, which would be like WP slash V2 slash posts question mark slug equals Brian. So then on top of that, what you'd be able to do is all of the rewrite rules are essentially just like regexes or regex, if you prefer, from URL patterns.
Soft G or hard G.
Exactly. So the rewrites are essentially just a map of regexes for your URL to WP query vars. So then what you could do is just transform those query vars into REST vars, and then you could pass all of that data to the front end. So you would be saying, if it matches this pattern, then go to this REST URL to get the data. And
right, I have to stop you for a second.
I think this would work.
And I have to admit something. You lost me.
You fell asleep 5 minutes ago.
No, I didn't fall asleep. I tried really hard to understand, and unfortunately, I'm a little too dumb. So
No. It's probably my explanation. But the end result of this would be an ability to have all of the rewrites continue to work, and you just have a way to pass that to the front end, so you could get the content that you wanted. So that's one way I think this could be solved.
Can we back up just a second?
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to go back to your original URL that you used in example, because it does something interesting. You said postatus.com/2015/automatic. Now, on my website, that would typically be a 404. However, WordPress was smart enough to say, oh, I think you mean this. And it went to /organizations/automatic, which is a custom post type. And automatic is the slug for the thing. So it picked it up automatically.
Yeah, the glorious redirect canonical.
Yeah, the redirect canonical, exactly. So the REST API, if you did not have any type of routing system in place, it would 404 that and say, you're drunk. in this scenario, WordPress did end up giving me something. However, the something in the redirect system is what told it to go to organization/automatic. Mm-hmm. In your scenario, though, let's say now you've got the right URL somehow.
Right.
But now you're at organization/automatic. The URL is what's telling WordPress in the traditional WordPress WP query sense. The URL is actually telling WordPress what to do, because organizations, it knows, is a custom post type based on your registrations that you've created. And then it knows to pull the object for the automatic piece of content based on the URL. And then it delivers the full object, which has all the information that you're displaying on the page. In your scenario, you're saying still let WordPress do all of that to the URL point, but don't return the WP query, correct? So you're saying now decipher the REST API request based on that URL?
Okay. Right. I'm saying that you would give all of the information to the front end that it could work out for itself. That URL, which is organization/automatic, is a URL that is it would pass the regex itself. So the front end would do the regex matching. So it would the URL itself would never be passed back to WordPress. The front end would transform that URL into a REST API request itself, and then request just that organization called automatic directly from the REST API.
And okay, so in this one theoretical implementation of routing, you're actually saying the front end would replicate, in a sense, what WordPress does in terms
correct.
Of figuring out which WP query to return.
Yes. So that kind of like, that's the really nasty part of the class WP, which just like loops through all of your reroute rules and tries to work out what you want. That's essentially the portion that I'm saying you would shift to the front end. But to be able to do that, you need the kind of transformation on the rewrites that I was talking about.
Okay. So you wouldn't actually get the entire object delivered and then create a REST API endpoint and then do that again, because then you're duplicating what the deliverable.
Right. Yeah, no, that would be a little crazy. Like, there is another way that you could do it. Like, we could have a utility REST API endpoint, which would just be like, pass me any URL and I'll return you the correct REST object for that. Mm-hmm. But I think that's kind of a bit of a sledgehammer approach.
The benefits of what you just described would be that you have the reliability of the URLs that WordPress knows and understands and feels comfortable with, correct?
Yes, correct.
Assuming that whatever you're doing to parse those URLs and find the right REST API query is correct, then for the most part, whenever you say go view this post or go whatever, go identify this date query or whatever, like all those will, the REST API will figure out how to do it so that your URLs are reliable.
Yeah, that would definitely be the goal, as long as everything is available through the REST API that is available via using URLs in WordPress, which right now may not be 100% true.
Yeah. So let's, what about a scenario where you're using a completely external routing system like React Router or something?
Yeah, so I guess essentially what I was just suggesting there is you would pass all of that data back to the client, so React in this case, and then you would procedurally build the React Router tree from the data that you received from the backend to do of how the rewrites worked. So you're essentially be kind of like duplicating that setup.
So you have to do this data even when you're using something like React Router.
Yeah. Well, so you don't have to. No, that would be like if I added a new post type on the back end and I didn't want to change anything in React, I would need some way to automatically be able to send that data across, right? And for it to set up the routes. So that's kind of what I'm talking about there, is where you would want to, all you would want to do is modify the backend with calling add rewrite rule or something else, and it would automatically work on the front end. If you don't want to do any of that, it's actually pretty easy. Yeah, you can just like hard code post slash slug in your React router config and say, okay, that means I'm going to look up the from the API here. Could just like forget the whole WordPress rewriting in that regard and just like write out all of them manually on the front end of whatever.
So this complicated system that we just described would make your routing system smart. But if you want to make a dumb routing system where you tell it all the potential available URLs that you anticipate, and you slap them in there, and then it knows that if it's slash organizations, then you're going to be looking at archives for organizations.
Correct.
And it,
So that's relatively easy to do. We should have started with that one.
That's okay. Let's pop into a real world situation that you've built then, because a day of rest .hm is a React driven website, and on this one I'm not certain, but I think this is a dumb implementation, right? Because like your URLs don't look like WordPress URLs to me.
Yes, exactly. It is a dumb implementation, just what I described. So we have our
not to belittle your implementation.
Oh no. I should say that the previous thing I was saying was my idea of how this could work. So I clearly haven't got it running yet. This is from experience of doing it the dumb way a few times now. Day of Rest site, for example, just has like a hard coded, if it is like post slash something, then I know to look it up from the post endpoint. If it is page slash something, I know to look from the page's endpoint. It's just kind of hard coding these structures in the React router in that case.
Yeah, and that's why I recognize that I thought it was the dumb way, because of the page URL or the page portion of the URL in between the main domain and the slug, which is a very non-WordPress-y thing. And then on your blog, it's actually a little less obvious because it just is slash news, which is pretty common for something like that.
The main kind of reason for that is in WordPress, because your rewriting is kind of part of the same system, then in the rewriting itself, you can kind of like do checks as you go. Say like, oh, well, if there's a page name that exists with that, then we'll route it to the page name. Whereas when you have them decoupled like this, you can't really easily check, if I go to slash news, is that a page? If not, then treat it as like the archive for posts or something. It's difficult to have that tight kind of feedback loop.
Mm-hmm. And on the same note, what would be smarter? So if I go to the URL and I do either slash 2016 or slash news slash 2016, trying to find a date query, for instance, a day of rest website, it doesn't even understand what that is because you haven't told it to understand what that is.
Yeah, correct. We only have like three rewrite structures, I think, on there.
So sorry for picking on you.
I don't even know if it's a bad thing. I think people are even a little surprised sometimes at how much stuff you can dig out of WordPress with the default rewrites that it has.
Historically, whenever I want to figure out if a website or whoever built a website gets WordPress, my favorite thing to do is just hit about 10 different URLs that aren't instantly visible on the website, but I know exist in WordPress, and I want to see how they handled them. And
right,
if they did, if they, if they,
something.
Right, if they never even saw them, and then you go to them and they're these atrocious views, then I know pretty quickly that like I'm gonna have to be careful if I'm you know, digging into that code, because I know it probably was developed by someone that wasn't super familiar with the way WordPress does things. That was like my tell, if that makes sense. But in this case, like it's headless, so it's, you don't have to make those assumptions, because if you go to those URLs, they're just going to be 404s.
I guess for like through a couple of iterations of building a fairly standard, you know, essentially what is a WordPress theme, but not using WordPress, just as more of an experiment, I can see there is definitely need for a kind of either a just a lot more reusable components around, you know, handling the rewrites in decouple system, like the canonical 404 redirect and things like that. There's definitely a good amount that you lose by not using the WordPress theming system. So I think it's probably gonna, if this is a direction that people are taking more, then I expect kind of more reusable components like that to be shared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's also, I think it might be on WordPress TV, maybe we can link it. Petya recently did a talk at, I'm forgetting where it was now, blanking. But I think it was called, like, We Need to Talk About the REST API. And it was basically, from what I could gather, I think maybe London or something. I think, you know, she was kind of the one that had to deal with us doing this experiment for the Feeling RESTful site. So we were kind of like, you know, doing our fancy dev thing, you know, thinking we were great doing all this decouple thing. But for her, it was actually, there was a lot of shortcomings because there is a lot you lose out on with doing that, you know, even just around the editorial side and the formatting of that when it was shown on the front end and things. So she just had I think it was a really good talk that gave kind of her perspective on, if you are going to go with the headless approach, then you need to kind of think about these things because you're going to lose some stuff by default. So you need to be aware of that.
Her website's petya.in, and I'm going to tell you which event it was in just a minute, but I'm pretty sure it was WordCamp London. That can be pretty confusing for someone that's just getting into it and they don't realize that that's something that they're going to have to deal with if they're going headless, because you might get into it and say, well, I want fancy theming or, you know, like templating, and I don't want to deal with WordPress templating. And like, you're potentially giving yourself a bigger responsibility than you think, because you're not getting these WordPress-y things for free. It was WordCamp London, and I'll link it in the show notes. And it's We Need to Talk About the REST API, the Non-Developer Guide to the Future of WordPress.
It's a very good talk. I highly recommend it.
So I don't want to spend too much time on like these things you get for free in WordPress, but I know one other potential gotcha is plugin functionality, because a lot of plugins are going to assume that you're using WordPress's view and templating layer. So when you're using something that's completely different, obviously you're not going to have things like certain hooks or whatever that you expect in WordPress.
Something like WP SEO is probably a great example.
Yeah, like implementing WordPress SEO and getting the functionality from it could be extremely difficult with a headless CMS. And you're going to have to account for implementing stuff like that on your own. Maybe WordPress SEO, I need to look it up. Maybe they're trying to do stuff to help you with that, like an endpoint for SEO stuff that you can then utilize.
I'm not totally sure. That would be cool if they are, but it's worth saying that like WP SEO is something that is, to me, incredibly complicated and black boxed in terms of like, I'm happy for WP SEO to have a load of crazy options and, you know, heck knows what craziness it's hooking in on the front end and switching around and stuff like that. And you're going to lose all of that when you're going to not be rendering your templates in PHP through WordPress anymore. There's obviously all the meta tags and all of that kind of stuff is whatever tweaking it might do to your title tags and things like that, which is definitely going to be a pretty large undertaking. And, you know, WP SEO is something that is, you know, relatively used for us even just on client sites because it's really just very good in terms of the admin side of allowing the editorial to kind of make SEO decisions, really.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I wanted to bring that up is because that's one example of what you need to be careful of if you're, for instance, selling this to a client and saying, hey, let's use a headless CMS, but hey, it's WordPress. Because when you say, hey, it's WordPress, or if you're taking an existing WordPress site and you're doing this in a new project, they're going to make assumptions too, and you need to be careful if you're the person delivering the project to them to not promise things that that they won't get, because it's almost like, in terms of what the end result is in the application, it's like a custom, you know, custom CMS almost, because you're only probably going to get what you work to implement. You're not getting all these free things, and it's worth being careful in terms of when you decide to dive into a project with WordPress as a headless CMS. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah. Like, if you're building something, I don't see there's a big technical change, but the problem is when you start saying, yeah, okay, it's just WordPress, and there's an expectation that comes with that label of, oh, it's just WordPress. Like you say, they would expect a lot of other things to act in the way that WordPress does, which it isn't anymore. So that's kind of that would be my like biggest warning, is if somebody is wanting to do a WordPress site and, you know, they're savvy enough to know that they can go and install some plugins and get some extra functionality after you've done what you're going to do, they may be fairly disappointed if it turns out that you took a route to render it all some different way, and they weren't kind of aware of the trade-offs that go with that.
Yeah, I have one more example that would be a kind of classic based on my time doing client work. In traditional WordPress land, it's maybe annoying, but not that big of a deal if the client says, hey, by the way, we'd like an events calendar on this website. And in traditional WordPress, it's like, oh man, okay, well, we can do that. It's going to be a small change order, and it'll account for, you know, making sure the output of the events calendar is styled nicely and stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, when you do this on a headless CMS and your application du jour or whatever you choose, you have a ton more work in terms of managing the output of that events calendar. And it's a significantly larger task that is underway. So your client needs to understand that, like, it's not just a simple change here or there, add this plugin when you need new functionality. You probably don't want to get too involved with something like this unless you're going to have a long-term relationship with the client, or the client is technically capable of continuing to work on the site themselves, right. or maybe it's a relatively static implementation.
Yeah, I think every case where we have taken this approach on the agency stuff, it's pretty much always come from like the client either wants to render the front end themselves in something, or they're very driven by like an API driven approach. Like, it's definitely not at this stage. I don't think we've ever, you know, had genuinely kind of normal sign. We're like, oh, okay, yeah, no, we recommend that you build this headless. You know, it's pretty much always come from some internal thing on their side. So it's not at the stage where, unless there was like a really strong reason for them to be rendering front end, maybe it was a very, you know, interactive web app or something, so it just didn't make sense anymore to do it, you know, through a WordPress theme. Then, you know, I can't imagine for some time at least us kind of like recommend that as the default option, for instance.
Mm-hmm. So with that, I want to get into some popular frameworks for headless implementations. But first, I want to thank our sponsor this week. And our sponsor is Optin Monster. And it's actually a good and relevant sponsor considering what we're talking about, because Optin Monster is a lead generation plugin that allows you to do forms and pop-ups if you so choose, and all sorts of things. To turn your visitors into subscribers, you can create A/B tests to test your lead capture forms. You don't need a developer to do it. One of the interesting things about Optin Monster is they converted from a kind of classic WordPress plugin to being essentially a hosted plugin where basically you can implement it with a line of JavaScript, which is interesting in our conversation because it doesn't require the WordPress view system in order to utilize it. So you can use something like Optin Monster. They've converted it to so you can use it on pretty much any type of website. So in a headless CMS, Optin Monster would also be able to work because it doesn't rely on WordPress's templating system. So yeah, it's a cool plugin.
It's more like a kind of generic embed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a generic embed. You can use it in a variety of ways. And, I always recommend people to be careful about when and how they use their pop-ups. That's one of the reasons why in my first ever review I did of Optin Monster, I said, if you must use a pop-up, use this one because
it's an honest review.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, they have something called exit intent. So it actually doesn't pop up until someone is about to click the mouse out. So it's not one of those ones that, like, as soon as the page lands, it pops up. So they give you the power to be very aggressive, or they give you the power to be much more subtle in how you show pop-ups. And pop-ups aren't their only thing. Like, you can do content upsells now and all these other things. So, like, if you read the article and you want more, then the pop-up comes up, like, when you click the button to say, learn more about this. So they give you a lot of flexibility, and it's the only plugin I know of that has pop-ups and stuff where you can do it in a classy way, if you will. So that's why I like Optin Monster as a partner. Go to optinmonster.com to check them out. And now let's talk about popular frameworks for headless CMSs.
CMIs.
What's the plural?
CMS, I guess, because systems is still just an S.
That's true.
I guess in terms of, like, rendering your normal website, but you want to use a different framework, like not the WordPress, maybe not PHP even.
Really, we're just saying what's the best way to build a website or
pretty popular. Much like that. That's really what you're asking at that point, is like, how do I make a simple website that's going to pull a data from somewhere and display it? Right now, I'd say React.js is probably the most kind of current way of doing that. Though that might just be the articles that I'm reading. So it's difficult to know, but React and Angular.js, I think, are both fairly commonly used here. Probably Angular more for web apps rather than just kind of static sites. I think React is kind of being used for static sites as well as a lot of web app stuff. That's kind of my read of the landscape anyway.
And both of these are primarily JavaScript-driven frameworks that can talk to the server. When you've been using React more than Angular, correct?
Yeah. I have not really built anything substantial in Angular.
So what are your favorite things about building a website with React? What do you feel like you get out of React that...
I think the for me, probably just the component model that React has, I think works well for how I like to build websites. So it's like in most languages or most frameworks, whatever, you do have a concept of having like a template part essentially in WordPress speak, and you can use that part in different places. It's just because the React's whole model is kind of around this concept of components and passing data to them to render them. That just fits really neatly, I think, with, you know, you can have a component to render a list of posts. So it's quite simple just to pass a list of posts from the API to that component and have them rendered. So that means that you can build a kind of component library, I guess, a pattern library of different parts of your website, or even share them across website. So it's just very easy to, I guess, like build little parts in complete isolation because of that. So you don't, you know, you could, if you want, focus on one little component for a sidebar widget and just build that, as it were, on its own page, but you just reuse that component elsewhere. So you don't kind of need to be building up this monolith all the time. That's kind of what I kind of, see is one of its biggest benefits, really.
And React has a lot of tools that people are building around it to kind of support the base framework, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's a really big community and because of that, a huge amount of community tools for communicating with APIs and pushing that into like a Flux flow, which I probably won't really go into here, but the whole ecosystem around communicating with APIs, displaying that data on the page, responding to events, as you'd kind of expect, really. But I find React especially has a very kind of rich and quite fast evolving ecosystem around that stuff. So there's definitely like stuff that I want to release that is specific for working with the REST API with React and making those things easier to pull data from your API in a more simple way and feed it directly into different components and things like that. So it's kind of much quicker to get going then.
How does Redux fit into React?
So Redux is basically a way to handle the data flow in your website or application. So the basic idea there would be you have, in Redux, you have a thing called a store, which is all of the information you may have fetched from the API already would be held in this store, and that is basically what is feeding all the data into your templates. Somebody clicks on a link that causes an API request, which is pushed into the store, and then the store just re-renders your whole app based off of the data that is now been added in there and re-renders everything, and now you just have like your new page there. So that's kind of the model. Is you don't kind of the reason why I don't really like building jQuery style or even Angular applications or Backbone for that matter, is it's kind of works on a very event driven model of, okay, now I've got this data back and I've got to make sure that I push it into the right place. What you do is you just push anything you want into your Redux store, like as much data as you want, and then you just render the whole website based off of all of the data that's in there. So if you have data for 50 pages already loaded because somebody's already clicked 50 links, that's all in your Redux store, and it renders all of those 50 pages, as it were, preloaded in your browser. So when you click the links, it's instant to switch between them and things like that. So once somebody's already visited a page and they click back to it, it's instant. So that's kind of this
visited
idea.
Visited a page at like any time or during a session?
Right. So this would be a session, but also a nice thing about Redux is you can just like take that whole store and you can like push it into local storage, or you can do other things with it, like the history push state. So when you're navigating back and forth, that's all instant and everything. So you can, just because you kind of have that single store of all the information where the user currently is in your website, which is choosing, what components to render on the screen at that time, it's all just very, very predictable because of that. You have your store, and that's all you need to render everything. Whereas carry on.
I was going to say, how's it manage changes? So like if you have stuff in the store from Redux and then the website itself changes, like does it clear it like a cache?
So that's kind of like up to you on how you would want to implement that. Like for example, on the Feeling RESTful website, if you were to load the homepage, or let's say, you loaded homepage and you clicked news or something. Let's say like in the meantime, I like published a post and you clicked home and you clicked news again, you wouldn't get that post. So that's something that I haven't done there. So that's just like locally in your browser until you like reload the page or something like that. So there's definitely ways that you could make that a lot smarter with checking and things like that. But it's worth saying that you wouldn't like have to do it in the way that I'm describing. But the point being that because you have this single store of all of the data, that just dictates how the whole app renders. Whereas if you're doing a event-driven kind of backbone style thing, to actually get to like the website to look like, let's say I went to your website and I clicked 10 things and I opened 5 pop-ups and whatever, to actually get back into that state, I'd have to go through like a huge amount of manual clicking again, because Redux has everything in this single store. It's just like a single snapshot of everything at that kind of point in time.
So in terms of React versus Angular, is it accurate to say that Angular is a little bit more all-encompassing, like it accounts for more of the stuff that you have to deal with, versus React you have to put some tools together more?
Yeah. Like, I don't know the exact terminology for this, but it's more like, I think React, Angular is a framework, React is a library, or the other way around. I think I go the right way around. So really, like, yeah. Angular is providing you the whole stack, and you do everything, you know, the Angular way, and it has a practice to follow for pretty much everything that you would want to do. All React is a very simple view drawing library more than anything else. All it really does for you is it will take some data and allow you to draw a template based off of that data, nothing else. So the, you know, Redux thing that I just explained is like another component you can bolt on to that to help out with managing the data and things like that.
Yeah, so we've been talking about React Router, Redux, with our English interpretations of these words. Those are part of a broader React ecosystem, whereas in Angular, the framework accounts for pretty much all of this stuff.
Yeah, the React ecosystem is, for better or worse, very fragmented across lots of different ways of, you know, approaches and modules, you know, very small libraries that you can tie together into a much bigger thing. So because of that, is can be a little more kind of exhausting to learn and also fatiguing to keep up with. So it's like there are downsides to that. But the upsides is it's kind of like if somebody has a good idea which fits well into the React ecosystem, which is what Redux was. That was an iteration on the Flux model previously. So, you know, and that quite quickly became very adopted. So it does mean that, like, new ideas that are make things much easier can be very quickly adopted because all the other components can be switched out as well and things like that. But it definitely is a different kettle of fish when it comes to development style and how you kind of want to be keeping up with how things are kind of progressing.
Yeah, I'm looking at a comparison of the two in terms of essentially doing Hello World with both of them. And they look quite different in terms of how you implement that. In both in terms of a creating the components and also the templating structure.
They are kind of fairly fundamentally different approaches to building a front end app, but at the same time I think they are kind of learning things from each other, and there's a good amount of sharing there now. Like Angular, I think, is implementing the virtual DOM that React was kind of famous for somewhat inventing at the beginning. So it's definitely bringing both of those frameworks, you know, much further ahead.
So one of the things that I would love to see more of, and it's not really out there right now, is essentially frameworks that utilize a system, whether it's Angular or React, I don't really care, but it kind of wraps something around one and it essentially allows you to get going with one of these frameworks and WordPress. And
right. It
kind of takes care of some of the decision making so that someone, let's say they're just a website builder, you know, like, and they want to choose to recreate their blog as a headless system, and you know, it's a relatively simple application. They would like to do it in a headless way. They want to theme it with React or something instead. Right now, you have to make a lot of pretty confusing decisions.
Yeah,
in order to do that,
a lot of discovery as well. Really, you've got to do a lot of your own research.
And there's not that I know of great examples of, like, here's a framework called React WP, and you go and you do like npm install and you're done, and bam, you're running, you're up and running. I did find one that's really pretty new, but it's by the Moxie team, and it's called Lean, and it's basically that for Angular. And I got up and running with it relatively quickly. They had some documentation issues and stuff when they first released it, but I'll link it up because if someone is wanting to just kind of see what the heck do you do to get started with this stuff, I thought Lean was a fun example to to be able to do essentially that. So you can have, like, let's say my level of knowledge about this stuff, which is pretty minimal, and you can get up and running with WordPress as a headless CMS, and you can see WordPress in a little Angular app. And I was able to get it set up to where it was consuming data from any WordPress install, and my Angular app was running locally. And all I had to do is tell it, like, this is the URL that you need to watch. And there was you turn a plugin on the site that's the source of the data. Mm-hmm. And then the Angular app consumes that and manages the data. It was really cool. So I'll link that up for people to check out. But just a note to anyone listening to this, if you have other examples of, hey, let's get up and running relatively quickly with any of these, then we would love to know about it, and we'll definitely share it. When you're doing a WordPress as a headless CMS, the one more question that I have is, what do you do when you have non-Git requests, so you're not just consuming from the API?
You're right. Yeah, that's a good question, because if you're running WordPress in a headless way, that you may not be exposing the WordPress install to the world, as it were. Like, maybe you're locking the access down to whatever is rendering your front end of your site. Then if somebody wants to use the API to post a form or something like that. I think specifically we did a project with npm.js where they had this, and they basically used... they had Nginx proxy requests from their main site domain back to the WordPress install on the internal network. So if you were to send a post request to, I think it was, npmgs.com/wp-api or something, they had Nginx automatically configured to reroute those. That's kind of the... that's the only way that I've had to do it. As for other ways, like you may be able to actually just make your, the API public, so requests can get sent directly there via the API anyway, depending on, security policies and things like that. That might not always be possible. So yeah, whitelisting and, using proxy with Nginx is probably the easiest way to do that. I don't know if you had any other ideas.
Nope. but generally you have to have something in place for people to talk to the WordPress install. If it's going to be a interactive website in the sense of delivering data back to the install itself. And it adds, it certainly, I mostly just wanted to make sure that people understand, like, you're adding complexity if it's not just a consumed application, correct?
Not necessarily. Well, no. I wouldn't say so. If your API is public, as in, like, the browser can actually make those post requests to it, I wouldn't say it's any more difficult than the usual, you make a WordPress form and you make the method post. If you have access to the API, you can use the WP API JavaScript library to do, really make it much easier for you to send post requests to create posts or whatever you might want to do from the front end of your website. Providing that you're not doing it in a, like, WordPress's hidden back behind a bunch of servers somewhere kind of approach.
But if you just have api.domain.com, where the main domain is the headless view, and then api.domain is the WordPress install.
Yeah, then that would be fine. Doing those requests cross domain is also easy, because the WP API supports JSONP out of the box, so you don't have the same kind of a same origin problem.
You would need to authenticate.
That is true. So if you're I was thinking, like, you would have, like, a contact form where you weren't authenticating those post requests. If you were authenticating, let's say you've got an app that allows your users to, log in, post a message or something. That's going to get a little more interesting because then you've introduced the problem with auth. And whether you're using the REST API or anything else, this is going to be a difficult problem for you as a developer. There is a couple of ways that you can do this. Probably the most cheaty, easiest way would be to somehow have the user log in on that site so they can get cookies on the actual API domain. That may not be feasible depending on how you're handling that auth and things like that. So
log in through the WordPress install still?
Yeah, essentially they would, in the case that we were just talking about, yes, they would log in at api.whatever your domain is. So you would somehow get them some cookies, which meant their requests that are sent to API dot are authenticated with cookies. Again, like this is only going to work for some cases. Maybe this is a mobile app and you don't even have this concept of cookies or whatever.
Right. Let's assume a web app, though.
Right. Yeah. So in a web app, I'd be looking at trying to wrangle cookies into doing it. The most kind of it's difficult to say because there's so many caveats with all of this auth stuff. But broadly, cookies are going to be easiest. OAuth is another way that you could do it that we are really trying to support really well in the API now. But that is going to mean that if you did use OAuth, you need a server component on the front end. So let's say you are rendering the front end in Timber PHP, or not Timber, some other PHP template, and it was a separate app. Let's say you were just rendering the front end in Symfony and it was pulling from WordPress install or whatever. Then you would have like a secondary server component that was handling the rendering. Then you could use OAuth and do it that way. Yeah, I'm kind of rambling about auth here because it's not something that I can like say this is just the way that you would do it, because it does depend on the situation. Let's say on Feeling Restful, if we were going to add even something like if you're logged in as an author on the main site, as in like in the admin, and then when you go and view the single page application, I want to like show an edit button or something like that. That's probably the most general case. Then I could do that via their logged in cookies pretty easily, so it's not going to be a big problem. So I wouldn't say like even that one is more difficult than default WordPress, but I kind of know the whole setup there, and I know that, yep, I would get access to the cookies and be able to do auth that way in X, Y, Z. So that's not going to be a problem. We will definitely depend on kind of specifically which route you end up going down in terms of like, where is the API hosted? How can you access it? What are the domains? Things like that. So it's definitely like, if you're thinking of adding that level of interactivity for, you know, authenticated use of things, which isn't unusual, you know, having edit links in your pages is something that like WordPress users are probably fairly used to. It's definitely something that you'll want to look into. And probably on that note, it's just reminded me that the admin bar is something, again, that you're not going to get by default.
Oh, yeah.
So
I could think of an example. Like if I recreated post status in React or Angular, if I wanted to create a front-end profile editing feature so members could log in and edit their profiles, I would need some form of proper authentication, right?
Yeah, you would. But I think in this case, you would be quite easily just be able to have the user actually log in via like the WordPress login page or some skinned WordPress login page that would set the cookies how you wanted them to.
Unless I have a post status iOS app where...
So if you wanted that and users could log in on the post status iOS app, now you need to use OAuth in your iOS app. And
could you build that for me?
Yeah, I certainly could, you know, if I get a spare few months, which is probably a
couple $100,000.
Yeah, exactly.
Will you take a 10% equity stake?
in the mobile app only.
Just in the mobile app.
Right.
Not the business.
Well, actually, it's funny you should say that, because actually I've been playing around with more React Native this week, and I've actually got on my phone a native app that I've built that is communicating with the WordPress REST API. This wasn't even planned, but fancy that. We're talking about stuff that I've recently done this week.
As you do, Joe.
As I do, yeah. It seems to happen a lot with conversations.
All right, well, let's wrap up with just a couple of examples of websites that are using WordPress as a headless CMS. where the front end or the view layer is completely independent of WordPress. And we've already talked about a day of rest. .hm, which is the website for the conference about the REST API, so it better darn well be powered by the REST API, right? You mentioned npm.js, but it's a portion of that site, so that's a harder one to nail down. But y'all have also built us2, which has gotten a lot of attention, like ustwo.com. That's a really beautiful implementation. What was
nice. So that one is using React, and it's probably worth saying that we didn't do any of the front end with that. Like, the nice thing about this project for us is that we did the back end and the API, and then we left everything front end to their internal development team. So that was like really good. Just, it's so easy when the responsibility ends at the API. It's really clear, like, what we're doing and what you're doing. And that's
so. Did you earlier when we were talking about like the expected URLs and all that kind of stuff? Did you stop essentially at the routing layer?
Yeah. So we were providing things through the API where they knew to get them, and they were handling all of the URL routing on the front end in a kind of
but you were delivering all the data that would be necessary.
Yes.
Cool. And there's a case study of more about how y'all did that.
I think even us2 might have written one.
Yeah, there's both y'all and them. Cool. Wrote one. So I've linked them up in the past, but I'll do it again. Another one that Ally Interactive did recently was the new Guggenheim.org
website. Oh yes, really nice.
Do you know what that one's built in?
I can't remember. I did read the case study on it, so I should.
It is. Remember. I see Angular in my little WAPalyzer analysis.
Oh, this is Brian's secret tool.
Yeah, I have a thing that tells me what technologies.
It's called Hello something or other. It's probably way back on the list now.
Yeah, I have a link to it that talks more about it. But yeah, it looks like it was a Angular it was an Angular implementation. So that one's pretty cool. And it's a fairly large website. Another one that uses Angular, and this actually uses that lean implementation. So Moxie built this website. It's scaled.com, SKALED.com. And they're using that lean framework, which is a WordPress wrapper around Angular. Mm. One of the interesting things about their method is they didn't use any of the endpoints in the plugin. They just used the infrastructure that's in core for theirs so far.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool.
Which is interesting. Seems like they lost some free work getting like the post endpoints and stuff. It was one of my critiques of Lean, is why didn't they just use the stuff they got for free?
Sure.
And another one that's worth checking out is the Modern Tribe website. They ate their own dog food, and they tri.be. They're a fellow domain hacker like you guys. they built the Modern Tribe website in React, and it also is extremely well done.
Yeah, it's really nice.
They do design in addition to development, so this is actually a full showcase of their work, so it's a nice little portfolio piece for them. And I'll link to a little thing where they talked about that as well. So those are some websites where people are using WordPress as a headless CMS. It is certainly a viable option, but you should know what you're getting into if you decide to go down that route.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, I'm winning you over one you route go. At a time.
I guess I'm selective in terms of when I use each one. Hmm. I'm confusing that way. So I think that's about it for today, huh?
Yeah, I think I feel like we've presented the dangers enough that I don't feel too bad about saying this is, you know.
You don't feel like anybody's going to try it now that we've scared them off?
Yeah, well, no, I'd say like I think it's interesting and exciting, and you should check it out, but just with the aforementioned precautions.
Yeah, I mean, I have a personal challenge to myself where I would really like to create my blog as a headless implementation of WordPress by the end of the year.
Well, I mean, you said you're going on vacation in a couple of weeks. Can you do it then? I mean,
that's the Joe type of vacation.
What do you mean you've got a family?
That's a very Joe-ish, exactly. Very Joe-ish vacation activity.
Yeah.
So if and when that happens, I'll let y'all know how it goes. But I figure a simple blog would be a good place to start because there's only a couple of expected URLs really there. And
sure. You
know, yeah, I can cool. screw it up and not be too afraid. So yeah, that is it for today. And again, we keep our offer. If you want to rate the podcast, we will read it on the show if it's positive and 5 stars. If it's not, then maybe we'll shame you on the show.
Oh, dear. I feel like we might be getting into some ethical issues here.
Joe, where can people check out what you're doing?
They can check me out on Instagram at @JoeHoyle_, just to be confusing.
Wow. Instagram.com/JoeHoyle_.
Yeah. I just like that one because... Actually, so I mentioned that something today and they said, why don't you have @Joe_Hoyle? And I said, I don't actually know. I don't think I checked that, which is weird because it's my other one, but you know.
Who likes consistency anyway?
Yeah, no, it's incredibly confusing. @Joe_Hoyle on Twitter, @JoeHoyle_ on Instagram.
Oh, I'm going with you on the alternative, alternative following placement. Mechanism.
I need the next social knowing will be _JoeHoyle.
I started a post status Instagram once they allowed dual login on the phone.
Wow. I'm really wondering what would be shown on the post status Instagram. I'm excited about that.
There are 12 grams on the post status.
Is that what a singular picture is called on Instagram? I never even knew that.
I just said it so.
Okay. Well, it is now then.
So if you go to Instagram.com/poststatus or just follow post status on Instagram, it's really depressing. I only have 63 followers right now. So, I mean, I really got to up my social media game.
I'm looking right now. This is my favorite WordPress 4.5 feature. This is pretty cool, actually. You've got a little video. Yeah, you've got a little video there.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll at least give you the pity follow. So you've got 64 now.
It should be noted that... Two of my 12 grams are about have human made in them.
Well, so the fifth one is about happy made, in fairness. I'm not sure if you're including that one or not.
That was my April Fool's joke, which was wonderful. If you go to happymade.club.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever mentioned that on the podcast. Actually, no.
Yeah, it's still there. It's my agency.
Happymade.club, hiring.
That's right.
Now hiring.
So we better get off this podcast. It was good talking to you, Joe. Have a good week.
Yep, you too. Cheers.